All right. Well, good to be together with you this morning. Thanks for coming here today. We're grateful to be together. McCleary's, welcome. I know it's a long journey, but we've all been waiting for you. Good to see you, your wonderful family. All right. I just wanted to rejoice. I got to tell you, I got to warn you. You're going to be in the shower singing, God is watching. That song gets in. That week, it just stayed with me. It's taken a few weeks to get it, you know, wash that song right out of my head, right? But really, you could see praise of God for what he did with our week of VBS. We normally have a prayer time, and there's a lot of lives that we have been praying for that are dear to us. And we hope you'll look at the prayer list, and Wednesday Night Live will keep you informed with those. But for the moment, I want to take you back to the summer of 1979. Some of you may say, you can't take me back there. I wasn't around then. I don't know, right? But the summer of 1979, my brother Leo, my sister-in-law Barb, got married that summer right here. And I remember because I was singing the John Denver song in the wedding, Follow Me Where I Go, and the words fell off the front pew and I had to make up like an entire verse for his wedding. It stands out to me. But that summer I had just graduated high school. I was getting ready to go to Philadelphia College of Bible in the fall. The school called me and said, hey, will you help us move? Because they were moving from 18th and Arch Street in the city out to Langhorne. And the entire summer, I was driving up and down 95 in a van because we literally moved 80,000 volumes of the library in a van, like all day, every day, you know. But anyhow, something else exciting happened that end of that summer. ABC launched the television mystery series Heart to Heart. Any Heart to Heart fans out there, right? Right. But Robert Wagner, Stephanie Powers, they were, stars in it. And they were this wealthy couple, very glamorous lifestyle. They had a private jet and a Rolls Royce and a Mercedes Benz all there at their Bel Air estate. And of course, with all of their business and things going on, they found time to be unpaid private detectives who solved all sorts of crimes, right? And some of them often were murder. And so the title of the show kind of played on their names, right? Because their names were Jonathan and Jennifer Hart. The show was called Heart to Heart. You know, them and their heart relationship, their bond as they journeyed through solving these cases. Well, as we continue our study in 1 Samuel today, we're obviously not going to find Jonathan Hart there, but we are going to see Jonathan's heart. It's just a different Jonathan. And the heart that he has for David that's built on such a godly bond. I want to begin, though, by reading some verses out of Matthew chapter 22, because they really are the basis of what we're looking at. In Matthew chapter 22, we read in verse 36, they came to Jesus and said, Teacher, which is the great commandment in the law? And he said to him, You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your mind. This is the great and foremost commandment. The second is like it. You shall love your neighbor as yourself. And on these two commandments depend the whole law and the prophets. Jesus says what? Love God first, and let that cause you to what? Love others. Love other people. And so I want to see these kind of four truths this morning, right? The first is this, a heart that loves God. Secondly, is set to love others. Third, a heart that loves self. Lastly, is set to love self. It's just going to stay doing that, right? We want to look at it, and as we've sung to the Lord to open up our hearts, we now look at his word and let him deal with us individually, right? The first thing I want us to see is that first phrase, a heart that loves God. Because in 1 Samuel chapter 18, we read a verse there that says this, verse 1, "Now it came about when he had finished speaking to Saul that the soul of Jonathan was knit to the soul of David, and Jonathan loved him as himself." If you haven't been with us, haven't been watching online, we've been going through a study of 1 Samuel. We just finished a couple weeks looking at David's victory over Goliath, God's victory over Goliath. And that's what this is immediately following, right? A few years back, a man named John Piper wrote a book called Desiring God. And he's written many books, but that was kind of his you know, theme, right? And he used a word to get our attention. He called it Christian hedonism. Now, hedonism is the love of pleasure, and we would normally be like, oh, you don't put those together, right? But what his premise was, if you love God with all your heart and soul and mind and strength, you will experience the greatest possible pleasure that a human being can experience. To truly love God, to truly desire fellowship with Him, to truly enjoy His presence, it's the greatest pleasure that we could possibly have. And to have a friendship with someone that is built on that is the deepest of bonds that we could enjoy. Because when you love God with all your heart, you are set then to love your neighbor as yourself. Well, that's what we're witnessing here in 1 Samuel chapter 18 and verse 1. We see Jonathan's listening to David after he's just defeated Goliath, and what Jonathan witnesses knits his soul to David. The word literally means chained, anchors. He feels such a bond, a closeness with David. What's it built on? It's stirring what he has already experienced, right? It stirs in Jonathan sees how David responded to Goliath. He sees his humility in the aftermath. And he says, wow. Not arrogantly, humbly, he says, the greatest joy I've ever tasted is just loving confidence in God. And David has that. There's something about that that is such a gift. There is no gift like that. When I've woken up in the middle of the night in the midst of anxieties and fears and heaviness and grips, and in that moment am reminded that he who dwells in the secret place abides under the shadow of the most holy God, right? The secret place of the most high. That there is this beautiful, confident peace in God's presence. There's nothing could replace that. I mean that honestly. Not $1 million, not a constant supply of Panzerottis, not 10 consecutive Eagles Super Bowl victories. I mean it. I would honestly give, there's nothing I would give up for that peace of having such confidence in God. Jonathan displayed that himself. If you remember back in 1 Samuel chapter 14, Jonathan is King Saul's son. And there in verse 6, we read, Jonathan said to the young man who was carrying his armor, come and let us cross over to the garrison of these uncircumcised. Perhaps the Lord will work for us, for the Lord is not restrained to save by many or by few. Jonathan says, the Philistines have so much more power than we do, but let's go attack these uncircumcised. In other words, they're not people who are trusting God the way we are. And what does he say in verse 12? So the men of the garrison hailed Jonathan and his armor bearer, said, come up to us and we will tell you something. And Jonathan said to his armor bearer, come up after me, for the Lord has given them into the hands of Israel. Jonathan says, I have such confidence in God. I love him with all my heart and soul and mind and strength. Let's go. He'll give us the victory. And now what has Jonathan witnessed in David? David arrives on the scene in chapter 17 and verse 24, right? Or chapter 17, verse 26. Where David spoke to the men who were standing by him, saying, "What will be done for the man who kills the Philistine and takes away the reproach from Israel? For who is this uncircumcised Philistine that he should taunt the armies of the living God?" I picture Jonathan hearing that and saying, "Hey, that's what I said. I felt the same way. This guy has total disregard for the living God. We're following him." Verse 37, David said, "The Lord who delivered me from the paw of the lion and from the paw of the bear, he will deliver me from the hand of this Philistine." Jonathan says, "That's what I said. It doesn't matter how much army they have, God can deliver us." And immediately it causes this tremendous, what? Bond in their souls, right? Gene Getz, in his series, Men of Character, and he's talking about David, he says this: "Later, as Jonathan stood in the wings watching David accept Goliath's challenge, and then saw him single-handedly slay the giant, his heart and mind flooded with memories of his own experiences when God had delivered the Philistines into Israel's hands. He immediately identified with David's experience and felt his soul strangely drawn to this God-honoring Hebrew brother. They had something in common, something very important. They both were men with hearts in tune with God. They knew the Lord personally, and they understood his greatness." That's the kind of bond that we're reading about here. Stuart Briscoe says this: "Do you see the secret here? What produced these similar qualities in two men was that they both possessed a heart for God. The secret to a lasting friendship is not to simply find someone like yourself. It is to develop a heart for God and then seek out others who love him too," right? That bond. When I first met Greta, I want to be honest with you, I didn't look at her walking across that college campus and go, "I love her soul." That's what came out of me. I didn't know her. I looked, I thought, "Wow, she's kind of pretty. I know I committed to my roommates that this is going to be the senior year of no dating, but I may not last very long, right?" And I thought, "I want to get to know her." And I took her out on a date, and her sense of humor and how easy she was to enjoy. And oh, I was loving getting to know her. And so I thought, "I'll marry her," right? No, I want to be honest. It wasn't until I got to know her soul, and I felt like, this is a woman who loves God. Her confidence is in God. She loves God, and my soul was knit to her soul, and we got married. And of course, once we got married, then the number one priority in my life is to love her, right? Wrong. The number one priority in my life, love God with all my heart and soul and mind and strength. If I love God, it will set my heart to love her and my other family members and you and my neighbors and the clerk at Wawa and people who don't like me, right? It all begins with loving God, right? With where your heart is. That's what they're really, we'll talk about Jonathan and David's relationship more in the weeks to come. But it is an absolute pure relationship that the bond is built on what? Loving God with all your heart and soul and mind and strength. Because what does it lead to? A heart that loves God, secondly, is set to love others. And that's what we see in the verses that follow. I'll read verse 1 again in 1 Samuel 18. "Now it came about when he had finished speaking to Saul that the soul of Jonathan was knit to the soul of David, and Jonathan loved him as himself. And Saul took him that day and did not let him return to his father's house. And then Jonathan made a covenant with David because he loved him as himself. I love God with all my heart. So does David. I want to build a friendship on that, and I will commit, right? Verse 4, and Jonathan stripped himself of the robe that was on him and gave it to David with his armor, including his sword and his bow and his belt. I don't know how many of you are fans of the Parks and Recreation television series that, you know, I could just watch, you know, and over, but Ron Swanson, I love him, but we're not a lot alike. You know, we are as far as our eating habits. You know what I mean? But Ron Swanson, he has a lot of quotes. I'm not going to give you all of them, but it kind of lets you know where his heart is set. He says this: if there were more food and fewer people, this would be a perfect party, right? But here's his quote that probably sums him up the best: the less I know about people's affairs, the better. I once worked with a guy for 3 years and never knew his name. Best friend I ever had, right? You see, Ron Swanson's heart is set differently than Jonathan's. That's not Jonathan. Jonathan's not like just everybody. Yeah, okay, that's it. All right, we said hi. That's it. You know, Jonathan is, I love God with all my heart, and now that positions my heart to launch into actively showing love to others. And that's what he does. Because he is free from the bondage of selfishness, he is set to commit himself to the well-being of David, right? One writer says, at great personal risk and considerable inconvenience, Jonathan accepts full responsibility for David's care. I'm going to care for him as a friend. I'm going to commit myself to his well-being. I'm going to be loyal to him. What does Paul say to us in Galatians chapter 6, verse 2? Bear one another's burdens. Well, as long as I don't have to sacrifice. Does it say that, right? When you love God with all your heart and soul and mind and strength, there comes this freedom to give of yourself, to sacrifice, to commit to someone else's well-being, to say, I'm in this relationship for your well-being. I'm not always going to be focused on mine, right? I'm not talking about being a doormat to be walked on and abused. I'm talking about that posture of loving God and being free to do what he does, right? At the beginning of, if you remember the heart-to-heart episodes, the beginning of every episode, you may not remember, but I'll jog your memory, right? That it starts hearing, you see them driving around their mansion, but you're listening to Max. Max is like their butler, main advisor, whatever, and you hear, this is my boss, Jonathan Hart, a self-made millionaire. He's quite a guy. And this is Mrs. H. She's gorgeous. She's one lady who knows how to take care of herself, right? And he's kind of describing this match of brilliant. That's not what we have in 1 Samuel chapter 18. Here's Jonathan, the son of the king, the heir to the throne. Here's David, shepherd boy. See, but Jonathan is not an equal, you know, exchange here, right? That's not the case for Jonathan. Jonathan's commitment, we saw it there in verses 3 and 4. He makes a covenant. I am committing to your well-being. And he sacrifices. He stripped himself of the robe that was on him, gave it to David, and he gives David his armor. He gives David his sword. One writer says, in a way, the gift of Jonathan to David anticipates the time when he will give up his right to the throne to his friend David. It's going to happen. Jonathan's going to step aside. David, you're the one God wants to be the king. I give up my right to the throne. It's yours. Reminds me so much of what we read in John chapter 13. Jesus gathered there at the Last Supper with his disciples. He takes off his robe. He wraps it around his waist and gets down with a bucket of water. And we read that Jesus starts to wash the apostles' feet. There's something very important to remember in those verses. Often we jump right into that. In the beginning of John chapter 13, it says what? Jesus, knowing his love for the Father. In other words, Jesus loved the Father with all his heart and soul and mind and strength. And that's what set him free to love his neighbors, to care for them, right? There is an order, there is an incredible truth that we draw upon as Christians. It's not just our own strength and what social injustices need to be fixed, because there are many. It's first and foremost, I need to love God. I need to love God above all else. That's what occurs here, right? I think about what the commentary would be saying, like the beginning of Heart to Heart. This is Mr. Mrs. H. And this, I picture that seeing Jesus in John 13. This is Jesus, the King of Kings, the Lord of Lords. These are his disciples, weak, broken, confused, non-dependable. And Jesus strips his robe and serves, right? That's what he's done for us. Seeing Jonathan's commitment, Stuart Briscoe shares a powerful quote: "You cannot operate from the basis of need and demand the attention of others. You can only operate from the basis of supply and offer yourself to their area of need." What I mean is, there is going to be a huge difference in your life if you're loving self, because if you're loving self, you will operate from what? Need. I have a need. Are you paying attention to me? Now, we're all going to have times like that. We're human beings, right? But what he calls us to is, if your heart is set to loving God, then you operate from a position of supply. How can I fill your need? How can I care for you? That's the way Jonathan was. He loved God with his heart, his soul. It knit him to David, and it set him free to be able to do what? Love, to love others. That's not how King Saul felt. We see the third thing, a heart that loves self. If you've been following with us, we met King Saul when he wasn't a king, and he was a humble person, humble before the Lord. He has long since slid away from that. As a matter of fact, we see part of his selfishness in the battle with Goliath. Because why is Saul offering gifts to someone to go fight Goliath? He's their king. He's supposed to be the champion of Israel. When they made him king, we read he was taller than everybody else and brilliant. Why aren't you out there fighting Goliath? I'll tell you why. Because Saul loves Saul at this point. Saul's saying, I'm looking out for me. And so think about how David's victory over Goliath now may land on Saul. For we read in verse 5 of chapter 18, so David went out wherever Saul sent him, and he prospered. Saul set him over the men of war, all the people, and also in the sight of Saul's servants. It's pretty amazing. You know what we're like when someone rises up above us, maybe they're below us, and they get that person usually gets a lot of shots at them to take them down because they rose up above the rest of us, right? Not David. Sorry, tech team, I do that to you all the time. Not David, right? David somehow was so humble that as God exalted him, everybody else was like, that's all right. You are the guy that should be getting, you keep climbing the ladder, right? and what David experiences. But look how what it flows from it. Verse 6, and it happened as they were coming, when David returned from killing the Philistine, that the women came out, all the cities of Israel, singing and dancing to meet King Saul with tambourines, with joy, and with musical instruments. The women sang as they played, and they said, Saul has slain his thousands, and David his 10,000s. Uh-oh. Then Saul became very angry, for this saying displeased him. And he said, they have ascribed to David 10,000s, but to me they have ascribed thousands. Now what more can he have but the kingdom? And Saul looked at David with suspicion from that day on. Whew. See, Saul is not free from the love of self like his son Jonathan. He is held tight in the grip, which leads to what? Jealousy. See, the song in verses 6 and 7, that was a normal song. They're just singing, yay, victory, fantastic, look what's happened. They're not really singing, hey, David did better than Saul. That's not what they're singing praises. It was Saul's victory. He's the king. David accomplished it. But the problem is what? Saul's heart. Because when someone is set on loving themselves, they're going to experience everything around them as a commentary about themselves. I could be guilty of it. I remember when we were in college and we were dating, Greta and I, and she went on the winter ski retreat with some of the other college, you know, guys and gals. She was a skier. I was not a skier. Those stories are for later, but you know, the accidents I had. But anyhow, but she went on this ski retreat, and I'm waiting, as her, boyfriend, for her to get back from the ski retreat. And when she got back, I remember, okay, you've missed me, I'm sure, right? I didn't say that. But I remember when I first saw her, she said, oh man, we had the best time. I thought, how? I wasn't there. How could you have had the best time? I had never heard her say that about something we did, right? And so for me, what's the problem? It was selfishness. Here she had this wonderful time, but somehow it was a commentary about me. Oh, you had the best time. I wasn't there. Oh, well, sulky sulk, right? Or whatever, right? But that we can wrestle with that. One writer says, this section of 1 Samuel is filled with contrasts. The whole range of emotions is experienced in this chapter. Friendship, love, celebration, envy, deceit, violence, fear. Because it's a contrast that can occur in us. And there's nobody to blame. James, the brother of Jesus, who did not believe in his brother as Messiah until he saw him risen from the dead, his faith obviously dramatically was moved upon at that moment. My brother has defeated death. Everything he has said about himself must be true, right? But James tells us in James chapter 1 and verse 13, let no one say when he is tempted, I am being tempted by God. For God cannot be tempted by evil, and he himself does not tempt anyone. But each one is tempted when he is carried away and enticed by his own lust. I'll read that from a different translation. But Vince is tempted when he is carried away and enticed by his own lust. We say lust in our day and age. Oh, sexual thing. You can lust that way. You can lust for power. You can lust for attention. You can lust greed, pleasure. The point he's making is what? What we know about ourselves. I can honestly say in my heart, I love the Lord my God with all my heart, with all my soul, with all my mind and strength. I truly do. But I also can honestly confess that there are times when that love for God gets disturbed. It gets distracted by love for me. And there's a problem when that happens because of what jealousy leads to. What do we do with it? See, just experiencing jealousy for a moment, that's human. What do you do with it? Because it often has three friends that accompany it. And it happens to Saul, right? That first friend of jealousy is what? Anger. Verse 8, then Saul became very angry. It leads to what? Suspicion. Verse 9, Saul looked at David with suspicion from that day on. Listen, suspicion is human. Our friends, our partner, our children, they deceive us. Something happens. We deal with it. It happens again. It happens again. Our human nature gets impacted by things. You are not God. You may forgive someone, but you're a human being. But what are you going to do with that when it's there? We have to take it to loving God, right? Because we're human beings. We deal with it, right? It accompanies jealousy is what? Suspicion. We often have reasons for it, but it can lead to what then? In verse 12, now Saul was afraid of David, for the Lord was with him. What? Fear. And if we let that jealousy just simmer, we can experience it, but we say, Lord, I got to bring this to you. The only way that I'm going to be set free from it is if I can love you with all my heart and soul and mind and strength and be free then to love. But if we let it simmer, it's going to wreak havoc. Gene Getz says, a struggle was brewing inwardly that would soon erupt. Jealousy that had been simmering in Saul's heart all along reached a boiling point and soon turned to rage. And we see that lastly in closing, that a heart that is set to self, love self, it is set to do what? To keep loving self. Look what happens in verse 10 of chapter 18 there, right? Verse 10. Now it came about on the next day that an evil spirit from God came mightily upon Saul, and he raved in the midst of the house while David was playing the harp with his hand as usual, and a spear was in Saul's hand. And Saul hurled the spear, for he thought, I will pin David to the wall. But David escaped from his presence twice. He acted on his selfish love by doing what? Acting selfishly to protect himself. Saul did, right? And his jealousy led to hostility that led to what? Destruction. See, it all starts in the heart. Heart to heart. One heart to another heart. But that is always built on our heart with God. Starts there. We're going to see next week. I mean, we're not done with this. Sorry, there's some more bad news to come. We're going to see how damaging selfishness and jealousy can be on our relationships. Saul's going to give us plenty of examples of if you let it simmer, how much destruction it can cause. But the issue is your heart. It's not even how you're being treated. Now, don't misunderstand me there. There is mistreatment in this world. There are injustices that we need to care about as children of Almighty God and seek to help deal with, you know, those injustices and mistreatment. But my point is this. If you're going to be waiting until you are treated right. See, love the Lord your God with all your heart and soul and mind and strength. That's where it starts. When you have that, he sets you free to love others as you would love yourself. And so the question we have to ask ourselves is this. Is my heart set toward others on the basis of my love for God or on the basis of my love for me? Let's bow before the Lord. Father, only you know our hearts, and you know how often we struggle, how often we just stumble. We're asking you today for your special grace. Forgive us. Forgive us for being led away by our own selfishness. In this moment, we confess it to you. And we ask you to change our hearts. Let us love you above all else. Let us find that tremendous joy, that true godly pleasure of loving you with all our heart, soul, and mind and strength, and setting us free, therefore, to then love others. Only you can do that in us. Heal our relationships. Change our hearts. Build bonds that are built on a mutual love for you. I pray in the name of Jesus, our Savior. Amen.